Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Chris. Just imagine this for a minute. You're sitting in your office. It's a beautiful September morning. It's in New York. You're looking out your window. You're talking to a friend in Australia on the phone. You've got your luggage packed. It surrounds you. You've got all your Himalayan bags packed because a car's picking you up, or a limo is picking you up in about 15 minutes to take you to the airport to fly to Nepal to take 14 people, mostly Canadian, on a Himalayan trek. You have the workbooks, you have all the emergency gear, you have the rescue equipment, you have everything sitting beside you, your bags are packed, the flight ticket's ready, you're on time, everything's going great, and suddenly you hear a rumble, and you're sitting there going, what the hell is that? You look up and you see the belly of an aeroplane, no more than 10 meters above the top of the building you're in, and you think to yourself, well, that can't be right. And everything rattles in the building, including the glasses on the table and the windows and what have you. And people start to go scream. And you watch this aeroplane fly, and it's flying. The wings are going from side to side, like it's a little bit out of control. But between your office and the future, there's only the Hudson River. But a bit to the left is one big skyscraper, well, two actually, that stand proud in the south end of New York. And that's, of course, the World Trade Center. And all of a sudden, this aeroplane changes direction and flies what I call, from my description, into the building. It flew into the building, just a little bit down from the top. And nothing happened. There's a little bit of black smoke, but there was just a hole in the side of the building and there was nothing else. And then, boom. A big bomb goes off, and of course the petrol that was in the aeroplane explodes, and next thing you know, we have a very serious situation on our hands. The World Trade Center collapsed 3 hours later after another plane hit the second building. Another building collapsed, which is not often talked about, but it was about half the size of the World Trade Center. It went down. And I stood at my office window watching all this happen, listening to the screams, watching people running up my street, which was Fifth Avenue, trying to get away from the debris falling. And I wondered to myself sitting there, and I processed the whole experience. I was called upon during that time to be of help to people. Of course, I can't have emotion in my brain. I can't be screaming, the building's falling down in my head while I reach out to help others through their drama. And so I had to quickly turn up. Now, turning up's a funny word because it sounds a little bit like there's an enthusiasm to it, turning up enthusiastically, but it's not. It's turning up is a calm word. Turning up means you turn up calmly. In other words, your stuff is not the primary overview or the primary occupant of the room. Your stuff can be, if you choose it to be, but turning up means you arrive complete. To arrive anywhere in this world complete requires that you deal with stuff. Some of it happened 30 seconds ago. In the case of the World Trade Center, that's a good example, isn't it? It happened hours ago, and I had a job to do. I had to lead people through drama in the New York World Trade Center collapse. There's no room for me to be in trauma, depressed, fragile, worried, scared. There's no room for it. Yet, quite often we're encouraged to be aware of our emotions, be aware of our scaredness, be aware of these things. So how do you deal with this sort of complicated potpourri of suggestions that people provide to you? Well, in my opinion, letting go of the past is probably the most important skill that any human being can have. Turning up in the present makes you available, avails you of this present moment so you can enjoy life. But secondly, allows you to be creative about the future because you're not hanging on to the past. There are two streams of the past that come into your backpack. The first stream are the stories you tell about the past. So that stream is a conscious stream. You tell stories about Fred or Mary or Dad or Mum or this town or that town or this classmate or that party or that situation or that event, and you tell stories about it. And to tell that story to another human being, you have to emotionalize that story. If I told you I went to school, you'd sit there going, what the hell is this guy talking about? So what? We all did. And that's the truth. We all did, and we all went to school, and we all had good and bad times. But in order for me to engage another human being in my story, I have to embellish the story. I went to, and I'll embellish my story, I was late starting school because my mother died when I was 3. We moved to the outback of Australia to hide from the pain. My dad did, at least. And so I was a year late going to school. So I arrived at the school, which was in a place called Irimple. And I guarantee you've never heard of Irimple. And these days, it's just a suburb of Mildura. But once upon a time, Irimple was a little rail yard where they loaded dried grapes, which are now called sultanas, onto trains by hand. Most of the people who loaded those grapes and picked them and dried them and set them in the sun were Italian immigrants, first generation immigrants, who had come out on the cheap tickets and loved working in the wine area. So they were shipped off to the wine growing areas of Australia, the fruit growing areas. So I arrived at school with quite a large contingent of people who couldn't speak very much English, and quite a large contingent of some rough and tumble indigenous people who were forced to go to school because that was the law, and then a whole bunch of others. So I was there at this school, and it was just a very bullying environment. I loved it because I was one. I'd learnt to live in the rough and tumble of the outback all alone, so I could handle myself, or as I soon learnt, I could get to handle myself better and better. So this is a story that I'm telling you, and I'm telling you this story and embellishing certain points about the story to make it sound interesting to you as a listener. But the truth of the story, the true story is this: I had a good and bad childhood. I went to a good and bad school, which was rough and smooth, which had kindness and cruelty, had friendship and turmoil. It had war and peace. It was happy and sad. The teachers were good and bad. The environment was positive and negative. Everything was just plain old normal. But I can tell that story any way I want in order to engage the listener, you in this case, or if I'm talking to someone who's not feeling very good about themselves, it can be a story about success and survival. Because I got beaten up every day and humiliated every day until I got strong enough to fight back. I remember in the swimming pool at Irimple, it was a very small 20 meter swimming pool with a small little diving thing at one end, and it used to get crowded with all sorts of people on a summer's blowy day. And I remember one of the kids at school who was a lot older than me. There was only one class at this school, and we're all in that one class. He was a lot older than me. He held my head underwater for so long that I started breathing the water. When I finally was released, I pushed my feet against the bottom of the pool, sprang up and came down squarely with my chin on the concrete edging of the swimming pool, smashing my chin open. And I still have the scar to this day. Blood went everywhere, in the water, on the thing. But in those days, we didn't care too much about blood. It was a part of life. And so there was no pool attendant. I just got out. The blood merged with the rest of the chlorinated, probably highly chlorinated water. And I went home crying with blood streaming from my chin and had to be stitched up. Those stories that we tell about the past become anchor points to the future. Because I'm telling you a story about a naughty boy, a bad person, a person who held my head underwater, a person who victimized me, a person who made me feel powerless. And I can hold that story about being powerless and a victim and a bully for the rest of my life. Therefore, when I meet people in life who have any semblance, any resemblance or any semblance of behavior toward that, akin to that person in the swimming pool, I could or I might have a reaction before I even get to know them. This means that I'm not living. It means I'm just remembering, fearing and avoiding, reacting to the world. This reaction causes the future to come. So whatever we're reacting to in the history of our lives becomes the greatest predictor of the future of our lives, especially the young years of our life. One of the most important things you can do for yourself as a growing, thriving, evolving, developing human being is clear those stories up. I remember going to an acting class at NIDA and we were learning voiceover, so we could do voice projection on the radio or on a podcast like I am now. And I failed the class miserably. What the teacher would say is, think of an event somewhere in your childhood that you've been upset. So I'd go back and think about my alcoholic stepmother smashing my father over the head with a saucepan full of hot soup. And then coming at us kids, 3 or 4 years old or five, whatever we were, with this very same saucepan trying to smash us, I grabbed my brother and ran out the door and ran and ran and ran to get away from her drunken self. There's a good story, isn't it? What I forget to say is this person saved my life. This person was a loving, kind person. They washed my clothes. They got me off to school and fed me. So I can create embellished stories. So the point I'm making here is these accumulated historic stories that we tell for the purpose of A, entertainment, B, claiming some level of empathy from others to recruit attention, to get love, to get ourselves in an identity, a brand, a consideration for others to work out. These stories become the toxin and of our life, and they ultimately kill us. As we get older, past the point of 40, those stories started to become a really huge backload of garbage that we're carrying around. Those stories are great fun to tell. They're good memories. So this stream of conscious stories needs to be let go, and for us to recognize the difference between a bullshit, which is a story we tell to people so that we engage them in whatever emotional loophole that we need, whether we need attention or we need empathy or sympathy or we want to apologize for our behavior because of our past or something like that. We need to know the difference between that and truth. That's probably the most considerate thing you can do for yourself, the most loving thing you can do for yourself, is to flatten out the history of your life and make it look as boring as anybody else's is. They were events, and until such time as we judge them, they're just events. We give them positive and negative spin, such as the World Trade Center story. The second stream that follows behind us is the unconscious stories. Now, we inherit unconscious stories from mum and dad. Surreptitiously, unconsciously, without a spoken word, they pat us on the head when we behave in a way that they think is acceptable, and they pat us on the ass in when we behave in ways they think are unacceptable. It doesn't have to be a smack. Smack is the most honest distribution of love and not love, of good and bad. The most dishonest is that look in the eye of a new age mum who looks at their child with scorn but says, "I love you, darling." That trickery that we go on with, that I'm a good yogi or I'm a good meditator, but there's a look on my face or look on our face which actually contradicts what we say we do. This sort of subtlety comes from the subconscious. When we believe through our religious practices or our yoga practices or reading thousands of books on self-help that we are something we're not. We are a creature of nature. And ultimately all the books we read can only lead us away from ourselves, away from being a creature of nature. When we argue with nature, there are 8,000 odd diseases and illnesses and mental problems that come our way to remind us to get back on track. We will fight those taps on the shoulder from nature by retelling the stories or by not exploring the subconscious. Now, the only way to explore the subconscious is to dissect reality, to dissect what's going on in our life. Are we happy? Are we giving happiness? Are we celebrating life? Are we commiserating life? Are we thankful or are we not thankful? So there's a checklist. There's a series of points that we can put on the table and say, am I really living in harmony with nature? Or is my subconscious brain running stories that I'm not aware of that are causing me to be out of harmony? The greatest gift you'll ever give yourself in this great life of ours is to reconcile your past and make sure that there's not one single moment, one single event, one single day that you can't say it was boring, it was balanced, and I'm thankful. This is Chris Walker. You have a beautiful day. Bye for now.